I'm really not happy.
Being late though.
No.
You can tell.
Close the orders, we can get some.
Okay, turn on the machine.
He did ask them before he said it.
Yeah, okay, the meeting will come to order today. And we will call our interviewee in, if you would, Wilbur.
Whatever.
That was a. Ray was pacing.
Yeah, he's a nervous.
Hey Larry, come on in and sit up here for us, would you please?
Nice boots.
Mr. Mandarin, wanting to pass these hard copies to you?
You get to sit right here.
Okay.
Nice to see you. Court lesson shaking.
This is the dance.
He could have passed them off.
I offered to pass them.
Hey Larry.
You got your copy.
Gotta do the dance. Okay Larry.
I respect the process.
Absolutely.
It's good to see you too.
Yes, we're a little bit goofy this morning, so we're going to start out with letting you give us 5 to 10 minutes of the overview of your resume and tell us about yourself, tell us about your vision, tell us about what you think.
Okay, well, again, I'm Larry Mattern, I guess, for the record you have it here.
For the record, yes.
Before you... I think we're keyed up. I don't know if you can see anything.
No, okay. Yeah.
But it's behind there.
You gotta turn it on. Okay. Okay. We don't have to go through this. Thank you.
I want you to see it. Either we go page by page or go from there, and it's there too. So we've got plenty of questions. So the.
Well, actually, just overviews, it would be, unless you want to take just one page by another, we read it later.
Yeah, I mean,
I'd like to hear what.
I'm going to give overviews, and that's these are bullet points. These are.
Okay, good.
Until you get to one page, which will still be just a big boiler point. So, I don't memorize the vision and mission statement, but I live it every day. I've worked it. That's the way I do the job, to make this the right utility. Excuse me. And we do, and my department does, and I see as a whole, we keep it reliable, economical. Now this is my view, and I think as being on both sides of this, I've hired a couple of CEOs on boards I've sat on that I think in public power, especially the job is power is the public, the personnel, and then also and industry could be the last one, but there's parts of that. There's a regulation part of it, and there's also the electric utility, this utility. And the attributes that I bring to this are my relationships. I've got more done in this industry. I've got more done in getting things built, more done in getting things approved for what we need for the betterment of our community. I've been able to do my job better from the feedback from you, the community, and from the industry by the people I know. Transparency. I believe strict transparency. You can know, I'll answer any question. You can know anything you want to know about me, how I'm doing my job, any of my employees. You can speak to all of them, right down from the crew cutting the grass to the guys running the control room. I think that's good to know. I think that it's the same transparency I should have to our public. There's nothing we do here that shouldn't be wide open. It's their utility. Strategic thinking. There's some decisions we make, like substation over at Neo City. We say, well, I can build a substation for $11 million. Why would I spend $20 million? Well, strategically, that could bring in a lot of business for our community. And that could be gives growth in today's dollars. So sometimes you make decisions strategically and not just based on what seems like the best business deal at that instant. Vision. In vision, I see that this is a utility that can go forward in a lot of different directions. One of the visions is, we need to ensure 10, 15, 20 years from now that we have good supply of power and at a low cost, and one that will be acceptable clean enough that it meets the EPA rules going forward. One of those opportunities is there's investor-owned utilities that are going to be doing improvements on transmission and in generation both. And I've contacted the president of that utility and then talked to Jacob from FMPA, and tomorrow, the strategic session at FMPA, we're going to try to look at that as a long-term way to ensure the power that we have to keep us going. Other vision is, as electricity, as homes get more efficient, what are we going to do here? If we have this excess power, what are we going to do? Electric vehicles is one thing. But the first electric vehicle opportunity is if you go right now, there's Volkswagen settlement money that was given to the Department of Environmental Protection. They want to have their first apple they want to pick from the tree is to have buses, electrically run, school buses and public transportation. I think we should approach the school board and go together and possibly get those charging stations. That, to us, gives us opportunity to get more electricity out there and also have a better environment. And then one other vision is, you'll see as I go through, I'm with Florida Gas Utilities. And being in that organization, I see many, many opportunities that if electricity could be one stream of income and natural gas uses, even if it's just for gas-powered vehicles, when you get to your much larger vehicles like diesel trucks, changing to natural gas is cleaner and more economic. And we could put, and we do have the gas lines available here, we could have compressor stations. These are ideas I have, and many, many ideas. It's wide open, but that's vision. And then safety. I want safety for the people that work at the plant. I want safety for everybody in this building. I want safety for the people that we're serving, especially the people we're serving. So safety is in everything that I do, not just at the plant, not just people in the office. It's also for every one of our ratepayers, because we have a product that could be unsafe, but it's there for them. So to run through real fast, when I was saying the public, I serve the public today. Through Leadership Osceola, they told me that I should look out at Four Corners. They were looking for folks to be in the Chamber of Commerce out there. I joined. I wasn't asked from here to join. I went on my own and joined. I saw that Kane Island's out there. We have 7 miles of pipeline out there, so it would be a good thing for us to have a presence there. I was chairman in 2009. I was chairman this past year and won the Eagle Award, so we did very well. Also, I'm in the transition house. I wasn't asked to join. I did that on my own. I've been there clear back to when the late Nancy Jemski was on the board with Jerry, with Dr. Gant, the mayor. It's very worthwhile. It's for homeless veterans. It's for, it also gets you, prisoner re-release and work program. Then at the top, Central Florida, I was assigned to that. It's a committee that I represent KUA on for Central Florida on Homelessness. And then the last, I'd actually have to turn the page because my vision is good, but I'm not good. And then the last board, I'm sure is very worthwhile. Oh, that is very worthwhile. Yeah. And it's the Osceola Emergency Center. My department is the one that furnishes, it has the people there to direct services and hurricanes. And I was appointed by former Chairman Hardy to be on executive policy group. I'm only on that during hurricanes or emergencies. The rest of the time, it's just the top leaders. But I do serve on that representing KUA by appointment. Public responsibilities, the first is to you, because you are the voice, you are the eyes and ears of the ratepayer. And the ratepayer owner, I'm responsible to them. The city, I do the responsibility to work with them. I've turned over properties to them. I've done cleanup in areas for them. I've presented to them. They just signed on to some solar. That was a recent working with the city. But I'm on good, and back to the relationships, good relationships with everyone at the city. We've worked many projects together. County, I worked with Neo City on that. I'm getting ready to sit down with the county manager and some of their staff for solar. He's asked me about that. I've also worked with them on whether to give our view of rooftop solar, whether it should be mandated on houses, and they wanted our opinion on that through me. So I've worked with them on that. Neo City, actually, I was the lone KUA representative with the county manager and with the people from Bridge when we met with Sean Q, who's the head of Canadian Solar, their CEO. Met with them in Orlando, and we did land that. They just didn't build it here. So we did well, not that whole team, and we did well. The Chamber of Commerce, I keep a presence here, they just told you that presence, and that's important because they're the face of the business community. And we need to be, you know, as a utility for that, we need to be with them. The community itself, I need to be present in the community. I am. I live here. I'm in KUA service territory. My mother and dad's in the service territory. My in-laws are in the service territory. My wife's business is on Main Street downtown. And my daughter and her husband live in the territory. So we're all customers. So I'm on both sides. I'm the owner ratepayer too. And so is a lot of my family. On personnel, when you get this level, we're still a small enough company. I feel we should still be involved in at least the biggest part of hiring and firing is the last word on firing and the last word on hiring. It doesn't mean you sit in every interview, but you are. And to build up personnel, what I've done, at least with our Kane Island group in power supply, safety again is number one. We train, communicate, get them a feeling of ownership, expertise. The proof we have good expertise down there, and we build up a group, and they're that good of a team. Duke Energy asked GE, who can I get to train our new people on our combined cycle plants here that we're building in South Carolina? And they said, go to Kane Island at KUA. And we've been training Duke Utilities operators for their plant at Kissimmee Utility Authority. They're about the second or first largest utility in America, and they're training with us. Mobility, we have lots of folks that came out of power supply that's moved up to become engineers in E&O, dispatchers here. We've had folks that's retired and then finished another 5 years at OUC. We had one at OUC as a dispatcher, and that's fine. I want the best and brightest, and I'll keep them as long as they stay. I'll keep making them the best and brightest. I'd rather have someone for a couple years of best and bright than somebody for 20 years of mediocrity. So we have a lot of that, and we have a succession plan. We have three-on-ones with all the supervisors down there every week with a different one. And when we have those, we ask about who's who, how the training's coming, and where they would fall. So we always have, if somebody comes out, somebody to go in their place. Then I've already talked about the success at Power Supply. We have the largest budget. I look over your largest part of the budget. It's between $120 and $130 million. That's why I'm so active in the FMPA side, because that's where your money's being spent. That's your other utility. And then I'm in... many, many cross-department work groups. I know a good feel. That's why one of the things that helped me prepare to know the whole utility, and it's an opportunity. We've had these cross-department work groups, everything from AMI to you name it. You've heard all the different ones presented to you. I'm in, I think, just about every one except for the security downstairs. So they give me a very good understanding and working relationship with all the VPs here and know what they can do. I've been in on both of the senior VP selections that we had when Joe left and when Ken left. And I understand... I understand the pension plan here. I'm the chairman of the board and the insurance. I was on a committee there for the insurance folks to on the insurance to choose our latest provider. Regulations. Okay, I'm going to go. No, I'm not going to. This is just an idea of how many regulations I need to be aware of how many different groups that I work with, and I am aware of all these, and we have always been compliant. And actually, you've seen this on my resume. Do I have a presence in the electric industry? Do I work them? Yes. I'm in all these organizations in one form or another, and some of them in leadership. The primary part I do of the leadership is, or where I'm really involved is that shows me the outside world is Kane Island, FGU, FMPA, the power pool. At Kane Island, good old home, and go back to Kane Island. At Kane Island, not only do I have relationships with some of the largest manufacturers so that we can leverage when we need to get things to us first and to get better pricing when it comes to equipment and all that. Also, we're exposed to the world. We have PowerGen down here, a tour by Penwell Press, by their request. Every other year, they give a tour to our plant. When Russia split up into the four pieces, Russia, when it became Russia, they split up into four different utilities. They said, we got to get our utilities and make them good. So they came to the United States to locate, went to GE, and GE told them where they were going to go see some plants. And one of the folks from Russia said, no, I was there at PowerGen. You're taking me down to Kane Island. And we took 17 people from Russia with the State Department and interpreters, and they made a tour of the plant and helped make their decisions what they would do there. We've also just done that with Puerto Rico, if you, some of you met with them with the delegation. So K9s give good exposure and good work with the outside world. FGU, Florida Gas Utilities, I was the chairman there for 5 years, unprecedented because I filled out one term, and then I turned that after the other 2 terms. During that time, we got a better deal for FMPA and also changed the governance where FMPA and KUA had stronger voting. Also gives me exposure to a lot of other cities, too, of folks that don't deal on the electric side that I wouldn't know otherwise. FMPA, I do a lot of work there for us because, again, that's where our power comes from, through us and through them. And it gives me an opportunity to work as a board. I feel your pain and your pleasure of being on a board. I'm on the board. They're not only on the operational part, but on the main board. 31 cities entrusted me enough to make me an officer. So I've been the treasurer there for 3 or 4 years. I've also was hiring. I was on the hiring committee for Jacob. Worked with that man there for Jacob. And then 3 weeks ago, they trusted me enough to call me and one other member to work with staff to hire the new COO. So we just did that. And then Lynn Tejada from here entrusted me enough to put me on a committee to hire her a director of power. And so I've been on the hiring committee there. So I've sat in those seats before, and I feel for your long day. I've done that also. FMPP, that's the power pool. Again, that gives me a good feel of how being in touch with our neighbors. From the power pool also came, you'd like to hear my biggest challenge. And I've had plenty of challenges, and they seem relatively easy in the sense that I've went in with, I'm KUA's vote, and we're going to do this, or we'll back off, or we'll do it alone. Crystal River 3 was contentious. At the end of the day, we got a really good deal. I've written many, many contracts, many laden with engineering-type things because I'm in an engineering-type field, even though I don't have a degree. I know all the different fields of engineering. But on this one, in FMPP now, KUA is not a member. We're a member through FMPA. So I don't have a vote. I have influence. Tico Energy, an Ameri company, wanted to join the power pool. I was told from the folks, bigger, better, just like us. Okay, so I did my study. So my study said, well, no, they're not just like us. They're an IOU, and that's what they want to do, and that's how they're in for a profit. I read that they were barely making a profit. I also read their reports, their annual reports. I went back a couple years and read each one, and they wanted to expand out into transmission through that. And then the assumptions were based on 2015 numbers, and knowing the power pool and how we dispatch and how we get paid back and forth, I said, some things just don't look like we're getting what we should out of this. So I looked at the risks. The risks are we're giving one IOU lower cost because being in the pool, your transmission's practically free. It's just the cost of owning the lines. And I said, why would I give that? And also we sell power at cost. I'm giving an advantage to one IOU and not to the others. So they might not be happy about that. It's a very big political risk, as we saw when we in Vero Beach deal. So I ask that we look at this from a different way and maybe do the study and get more value out of this. The value of the deal, so after the research and I identified the risk and did the research, I kept driving that we weren't getting, that things were dangerous here. I met with Gordon Gillette down at Tico and asked if we could get more value, which he offered none. Then after he was gone, I was meetings with all the bunch with Nancy Tower, their new CEO. I talked to Eric Shilaji a few times and asked him how he would feel about this. And he said he wouldn't join a pool like that because of the way the cost. The good thing out of that, I have a good relationship with Eric Shilaji, so I'm able to speak to him anytime I think there's a problem or think there's encroachment or anything. So after the credibility came, they had enough credibility. I've been production subcommittee chairman for 20 years. And we're not even a member anymore. We're FMPA's a member. But they've kept me on it because I've been honest and had a lot of integrity with it. And I don't push agendas, only what I think is fair for everyone. So they say, okay, we'll do a new study. If Larry must be on to something, if Larry's pushing on this, let's do a new study. They did a 2017 study, and we even got less benefit. So with the less benefit to it then, we went to Tico and said they were standing to get $30 million, rest of us about $1 million on this deal for 2 years. So we said, we need some of that, and we want a fair deal. So we offered a fair deal, and they said no and walked away. The only reason I was able to get that done was through influence by saying, by reporting on FMPA's, the floor of FMPA's board, saying there are requirements that this, there's risk, there's these things, and I had to convince them to give, that gave me the strength to convince Jacob, and that gave me the strength to convince the other two who presented at FMPA to try to change their minds, to convince them the deal as it stands is not good, the deal has to be fair. And when we came to a fair deal, then we exposed T-Code, and they wanted a deal a little better for them. So that was my, so it came out to a good ending, and it tested me in all my different ways. So going back again, this is my, and thank God you have papers. And again, this is what I bring you. These are my attributes. I hope that I've communicated to you enough of what they are. And that ends the presentation.
Very, very good. Thank you.
Could I ask a follow-up question concerning his presentation?
Yeah.
Okay. If you were to become the general manager, would you have to relinquish, would you have to resign all these boards that you currently sit on?
No. In fact, matter of fact, I have to thank Mr. Walsh. The reason I sit before you today prepared to be your CEO and president is in the past, Mr. Walsh did sit on the board of directors. Most of the people I sit at FMPA. Most of the people I sit with at FGU, Jacob sits on that board. He's the CEO there. You know,
No. Because it's on just a follow-up. Well, we're taking time away from it. It's supposed to be
okay,
a short
follow-up. Okay,
I'm
sorry. Yes, I can sit on, to make it simple, I can sit on most of those, yes.
Thank you. And I didn't mean to be...
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
It was just that was outside the parameters. So, Ethel, you have a question? Well, we tried to keep it to 4 minutes.
Okay.
Larry.
Yes, sir.
If you become our general manager, how will you involve your staff in daily operations and assist them to prepare for their next level of responsibility?
In their daily operations, I would give them the tools they need to do the job. There'd be open communication, and what I mean by the tools to do the job, first we'd have clear communications to see what they're doing. I wouldn't interfere on their day-to-day operations because that's what they're hired to do. I'd make sure I have the right people, have the ability. The most thing I would need to know from them on day-to-day would be outcomes. I'd have goals set for them. And there would be outcomes that would show those goals are being done. And I would check periodically with them and say, where are we at on outcomes to achieve the goal? If for some reason that, as I kept periodic checks with them, that they were getting, weren't able to achieve those, then we'd find solutions where I would get them the assistance they need to achieve the goal. One way I would do this, the one-on-ones, as I mentioned earlier, we have three-on-ones down at Kane Island. There's me and to my direct staff, I would start the one-on-ones again. Mr. Walsh used to meet with every VP so that you never lose sight of where you're at on all your goals, no matter what the daily operation is. More than just what we have in the meeting here, we're working as a team that we have weekly. But the one-on-ones, you're actually working, seeing where your VP is and where the department is. And it's very useful to have those. I found this rewarding. And it did keep you centered to what you needed to do. I'd also give any opportunity to develop, well, my direct staff, all staff would have a chance to develop up. And it was funny, I saw Enrique Candelaria out the window when I was waiting to come in. He was a meter reader, and he came to our power plants and asked questions how to do things. But he also had training as a mechanic, so I got him in the plant as a mechanic. And then he came into operations, that's what he wanted to do. Then he started going to school, and then he became, from there he became a technician, and now he's an engineer working with Brian. Those are opportunities and he's not the only story to come out of power supply like that, but he's an example that just, I was reminded of seeing him. I give those, the whole company, I'd like that. I can't go down and do all that. Direct staff as VPs, I'd give them opportunities like I've been given. I'd put them on some committees or have them come with me and not just as a shadow, but participate with me on different things. And they would certainly be wide open to speak to you folks anytime you wondered if, so they would have clear direction from the board, and then I'd get the feedback from you and from them, so I'm seeing I'm not missing anything. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Ray?
Okay, Larry. How would you analyze the capabilities of the existing staff?
What method would I use? Some of it would go back to the, how I answered the last question is, I know from working interdepartment and also from my exposure and being in this industry for 28 years here at this utility, what expectations are. So it analyzes the capabilities of the staff on a lot of things. One would be the culture of their department. You know, are they running a good culture that's conducive for all the employees to come to work? We do have a way that we measure that annually, but whether they're scored higher or low, that's hard to look into, but then you have disgruntled employees sometimes too, can skew those. But I would want to know that there's a culture throughout this company like that. So if I see they're creating that culture, that'd be one measurement. Another would be, are they getting jobs done in the times? Because I would hopefully have good, clear communication to them that I would have expectations of when things need to be done. Also, there's metrics in our departments. I mean, in customer service, are they getting, high grading customer services? Whoever being power supplier, is your availability record? And so I'd analyze their capabilities on how those things got done. And also how the rest of their staff reacted to them. Their communications to me and their honesty. And they'd have to be honest and have integrity. And I feel we do have that here. I'd expect that. That'd be another metric to measure with the analyze.
Kathleen?
If we think of KUA as kind of the hand and the CEO is the center of it and the vice presidents are the extension of, or the fingers of the hand. If you kind of look at all the vice presidents, finance, customer service, so forth, where do you see your strengths? Where might be more of a weakness? How have you gained your skills in all those different areas? And have you had oversight duties for any areas other than what we know about?
I had 4 months of director oversight in my department. When Greg Westner left here, I took the SCO, which was our compliance and some of our technical in the field of SCADA and relay. And I had it for 4 months before Brian got here, and I found that they were a great bunch. It was easy to work with. They're very, all very good professionals. So I have experience with that for dispatch, but I had experience with that for years, working with that and dispatching when we used to be dispatched through here with our power equipment. My strongest, so going in order of strength, my strongest, of course, is power supply. Mm-hmm. E&O would be right up there. I've actually had classes on how to design the system we have out here and how to maintain it. And also the power plant's a part of that system. Some of our transformers are bigger, but they're operated the same way, voltage regulated. Same thing with line sag, whether you're doing it in short span, transmission here at 69 kV, if I'm doing it at 230 with me, I know all the regulations and rules and what I know the N2s and all that on how much I can overload a system and stuff when I'm designing it for the size and how much the capability is that I can run it to. To know whether to do additional. So I'm pretty good there. Believe it or not, finance would be another one that I'm high with because I work with Joe Hostetler a lot, and I work with Kevin a lot. Joe Hostetler, he was on the committee for the budget committee at FMPA, and I always attended with him because most of the budget there is based on, on all the equipment on the power plants. And Joe realized, or at least flattered me enough that I said I know enough about the budget and the finance side that he stepped down and had me on that position. I've been here since because I do understand both sides of it. Also, the load forecast, since I've been VP, I get the load forecast from FMPA, and then we decided in there. So finance, I'm strong. Customer service, I have an understanding on that, and I have an understanding of all of them because I told you earlier we have the groups that we work with each other. So we work with each other all the time. The communications, I might be a little weaker. I might know what needs to be done, but I've never done it. Chris does very well at that. I know Chris's phone number. So I never fall into a story to be told right. I go to Chris because that's when we kind of tell the story right. If anybody was stopped me on the street, they I would give an honest answer, so I don't think I'd get in trouble that way. They'd never come back and say something different. HR is in all the departments in my degree. My degree is almost like CEO school. It teaches you how to run a company, and it hits every department, including contract law. I know what the laws are supposed to be. I understand the laws. I understand legal contracts. I still are not foolish enough not to bring in, our attorneys to help, to give me an opinion. The hardest one to just keep up with the BIT because it's so fast moving. I used to be an expert. I was in INC Tech. that's been a few years ago, like 25, 27, 8 years ago. That's a hard one to keep up with. Do I know what the goals and what we're trying to achieve? Yes. But to have a good feel of what the right technology and stuff, I'd have to study to keep up with that. It's too fast moving. Judy's department, I'm expert on that because we do the exact same thing in Canada. I've got a warehouse. We do purchasing and we take care of the grounds. So I'll put that with power supply. I'm expert there.
So lawn maintenance is one of your.
I can mow lawns. You can ask my mother and dad and my in-laws. I mow them every Saturday.
Thank you,
Manny.
Yeah, I think you answered this part of this question in your opening statement. But if I went out to Cade Island, your domain. And I spoke to all your subordinates, everyone that's out there. What would they tell me about your management style and your leadership style, your abilities?
From what they tell me that I do a good job. Of course, I'm the VP. I'm not going to come in, walk in the door, and they're going to say, "You're the worst, get out of here." They do attack me for my football teams and stuff like that. And we do have the relationship that we speak freely to each other, and like that, it's a comfortable place to work. They would say, and I think I've proved it, that I'm fair and consistent. And I learned that because clear back to Neville. When Neville Turner was here, he taught fair and consistent when you do anything with personnel. And I've lived by that. They would say that I'm open to new ideas, that I'm firm, that I'd like to pull in consensus, but if a final decision needs to be made, if there's more than one agreement, then we'll do it. But I think you'll be happy. The biggest thing coming here today, the thing that almost emotionally moved me was that so many people stopped. I mean, they might be stopping everybody, the other candidate too, but saying, "Yeah, we really hope you get it. We hope you're doing well." And that's really the job here. I mean, it's really good to hear that from people and say, "Well, I mean, I think I could do the job." And these folks really support me. And these are people who have nothing to gain by telling me that they support me. So I hope that's what you hear. You get that I'm a good leader. I'm fair with them. I treat them right. But we all know we have a job to do.
Can I follow up on that? I'd like to follow up on that. And I don't think it's too sensitive to ask you, if you do get the position, the other VPs that are in line, you're wanting to be also. Do you think there'll be any problems with that? Do you get along with everybody? You think it'll be accepted?
I get along with everyone here. I work on groups with them all the time, and I say, Commissioner Walsh is correct. When he started going to teams, silos down, and teams start working, and that's been going on for a few years now. We all know each other. We all know we're in for this job. We've talked to each other about it, and none of us has said, "Well, if you get it, I'm gone," or anything like that. We've never said anything like that. I don't see an issue with it. And if any of them didn't understand it, if I had a VP working for me and they're not understanding it appears they're not, first thing I'd look to myself and say, "Okay, am I missing something on communication?" Because it could be me. Am I missing something on communication of what we're doing here? And the next thing, I would sit down and talk with them and say, "Do you see a mistake I'm making, and let me know what it is?" And then if we all sit down and find out, "Well, Larry, I want to do it this way, and you're doing it this way," and it comes to the thing, well, there's two ways to do things, and one's a little better than the other, then I would have to, let them know. I don't think if there was other VPs here, We'll put VPXs all around here that don't act like the good staff we have here, and they say, well, I'm doing it this way. I'm not, and it's always been that way. It'll get to the point that, you know, then you would have to talk and try to coach them to that way, and if it didn't coach, then you replace. But that's, I don't see that with the staff we have here.
Likewise, your feelings.
Same.
Thank you very much. We have Jose's question is...
And we have to ask all the same questions that were asked yesterday, and Jose's not here, so I'm asking his question. And I feel a little silly with this question. Briefly explain your familiarity or expertise with our power supply resources and our relationship with FMPA.
Got touched on a little bit in the opening statement.
Yeah.
I wish I knew that question was coming. I would have said, let's jump forward to Jose's question while I'm on the slide.
Should we just get out your slide?
Maybe briefly is the key word here.
Well, we have 715 megawatts of jointly owned power down at Kane Island. Number unit 1, 2, and 3 is jointly half owned by KUA and by FMPA. Unit 4 is completely owned by FMPA, which we're a member, so we own it, and our share is about 30% of our ownership. We own the rest of the land around it. We jointly own the transmission, what we call the same use, and it's 60. We want a 68-32 split on that because it's common facilities. Because the common facilities are used at Unit 4, which is 100%, there used to be 50-50 split on common. So since that's there, they pay the bulk of that. So if we would do something on our transmission lines, they pay the bulk of it. It also goes to the substation in Clay Street, so that we have the ownership there. I actually negotiated the sale of the 9 acres down there where Unit 4 sits. I negotiated the sale for that and also for the common facilities split. Then relationship to FMPA, we're under contract with them, operation maintenance contract, which I wrote. and we have a TARP agreement on how we get paid, which I wrote. With the help of finance and legal, but the main points in it. So I mean, we can, if you want to do a deep dive in the contract, we can talk about that. But that's our relationship. We're in a contract. It's like they have ownership because they pay 100% plus 30 on top of our wages. But then all other activities down there. Our relationship is to make a budget every year and present that to them. And when they accept that, then we move forward.
Thank you.
Very good. Larry, you have been on the job, the CEO job, for 3 months and have discovered that some of the long-term employees are passively resistant to your strategic decisions or direction, culture and change, and culture and change initiatives. They're talking the talk but not walking the walk. What would you do? What approach would you take, and what are your options?
That's pretty similar to what we were talking about a minute ago.
You're going to find that a lot of this is going to be redundant.
And I would do, as I said before, step one is introspective. If somebody's not doing something, if you've had meetings and one-on-ones and you give what you feel is clear instruction and it's not being followed, well, the first thing is, was it clear instruction? You know, it always starts here. So I would examine and make sure that how I instructed it was that way. Then I would approach them and say, and re-give the, you know, reiterate the instruction and ask if that's how they understood. If they say they did understand it that way, then again, I would ask them why, what's a reason why you wouldn't do this? And also, not as a threat, but from the outset, I'd let everyone know, you know, their job here, right down to the top to the bottom, is to do as we're asking, unless it's unsafe or illegal or immoral. Anything after that can be considered as insubordination. I wouldn't come with the insubordination threat. That would be at the very end, if after we've talked and tried to coach and either they show me that it's a better direction or I show them why they need to go the direction I've asked. If it continues that way over a long period of time and the coaching doesn't fail, unfortunately, no matter how long term they've been here, then we have to start looking into whether they work here or, you know, whether they want to make other choices.
I have a follow-up to that. It comes because you've been here such a long time and you know so much about everything. As the CEO, you will have people under you that will be doing those jobs that you know about. How are you going to handle them when you think you know more than they do?
First of all, I would never let them feel, give the impression that I know more than they do. Because they should know more than me. In their specific fields, with it, my only advantage would possibly be power supply. Every other field, I hope they know more than I do, even though I've been here so long and I know what the outcome should be. I hope Jay and Jason know more than I do down at the plant. Well, they do now because I haven't been down in front of my offices here. And that's what I want. I want people in those fields. My job as a CEO is to hire the best people to do the jobs and be the experts in those fields. So even though I may see, if the only thing I could ever see that I would see is if I see a mistake coming that I've already lived through, and the old saying, I'm not smart, I'm experienced. From my experience, if I see a mistake coming, I would certainly come to them and have them to take a good look to be sure that we don't make that mistake. But when it comes down to whether or not, you know, I know and they don't know, they better know more than me, because that's what I would have people there for, hire them for.
If you feel that they don't know as much as you do, would you help them learn?
Yes. If the gulf was too large, I might have to consider a lot of things, but I don't see that. You know, we're pretty successful here.
Okay, thank you, Ethel.
Larry, if you were, if you became our general manager, do you plan to replace yourself with an outsider, or will you bring someone from in?
I have inside people that could fill my job, and that would, and I encourage inside people, but I'm also not going to, I think it's a great thing that, like we're doing here, and like what I've done in the past, and like when I put for VP here, that we open it up. My preference is the inside employee, because I know them, I've trained them, and I know that they're ready. But maybe there's something I've missed. Maybe there's somebody on the outside to bring something that you know, in these interviews tells me something that I've been all wrong, that it really helps us get in the direction we need to be or gets us into the future. So it would be open. My preference is inside. I've replaced two shift supervisors from the inside just recently. And there's always, I've got seven, and the hardest thing for me to do down there, I've got so many people that are ready for some of these jobs, and there's just such a great staff there. When we fill these, you're saying, the hardest thing is who do we take? So the outside employees have never been that much of a challenge, because we just got good people. In Jason's place, he came from the outside for that position. And if it comes to that, I would do this again in different positions. If I have a position that my people that the staff there are unwilling to take that job, that have the experience and the skills, and the others don't have the skills or the ability, then we go to the outside. But I've only found one instance where I can do that.
And as a follow-up, Larry, are there any people here that you would replace once you become the CEO with an outside person?
I don't see where that any openings that need replaced from an outside person at this point. But again, I'd have to be CEO for a while. But I don't see. I've been here for a while, and I know just about everything that's going on here. I don't see that opening right now where I need to bring an outside person or something.
Thank you,
Ray.
Okay, a little different slant on things. What major changes do you anticipate in the electric industry over the next 5 years?
In the next 5 years, it's going to be something's going on with electric vehicles. It's going to be electric vehicles. It's going to be one of the things we need to jump on pretty quick. Excuse me, I was at the electric vehicle conference with Manny. And the auto manufacturers, even if you watch the news, they're getting closer and closer. They're more and more getting involved in electric vehicles. So apparently the price of the vehicle and the price of the batteries got down to the point where they figure they can sell cars. To us in industry, that means what do we do? So why do we care? Well, first of all, it's good for us as efficiencies come, and we're going lower and lower on what demand is from houses or the energy use. 2 to 3 cars equals one house. So that could start, you know, leveling out, and we'd be able to use our resources going into the future, planning the future. The other challenge is if more and more is coming in the next 5 years, right now, we need to start studying our transmission distribution system and see where we are on transport things to handle this load. Any of the plug-in or extra power things would be any of the homes feeding in or feeding out we need to examine to be sure we have transformers and lines that are capable to handle the load going in and out. You get a bunch of cars sitting at one end in homes, it could overload transformers in a hurry. So that's one thing. Another thing, the batteries itself are as large-scale batteries I've reported here. They're a long time away unless there's another breakthrough beside the lithium battery. Do I watch it every day? Do I ask FMPA to study all the time? We have folks that check that all the time. Yes, we still should watch it. But batteries could be a big game changer. I don't see that in the next 5 years. Next 5 years, I see the EVs coming in, the electric vehicles. Solar may slow down. Our farms may certainly be the way to go because our solar farms may be the bargain of the century because we're getting in while there's still the taxable, the 30% is down 29% now already or 27%. They've cut some back. It's supposed to phase out. It might come back in, but there's a glut of solar panels also. So solar power is going to get expensive again, put on the rooftops, I predict, in the next 5 years, unless there's a big change in things. So that would be, you may see more and more of what we're doing with the solar farms, which is really actually, the reaction we've been getting on that after the city is that on the industry-wide, that's what it's, oh, transmission, I'm letting my own pet project out. In the next 5 years, transmission is going to need to be built. It's going to, and we need, we're asking for the changes, not what I would do. But transmission needs to get built. We have plenty of generation to stay. We can't get it from place to place.
A bit of a follow-up question on the electric vehicles. Do you foresee that when people buy the electric cars, they're going to want to have charging stations within their residence? And are we able to provide that?
We can provide anything, and anything's possible with time and money. But what we'd have to do is study to see what the liability would be, whether we're in that business or not. We're in a business for getting the power to the house. So even having the charging station area, if they did it with a third-party vendor, we found out with our experience in working with our neighbors at OUC and a lot of things break down to rooftop solar, is you're to still serve as the utility to your people is that you vet the outside vendor that does the things you don't do. And you give them a good list, so they still turn to you first, and you still have the answers, but you don't even get into businesses that you don't normally do or take on liabilities you don't usually have on it.
Thank you. Kathleen?
Tell us a little about the staff that you manage or have managed in the past, the number of employees, breakdown of managers, supervisors, professional, clerical, first-line craft personnel.
Okay, staff, I've been up to 70 employees when we had Hansel and Kane Island both, and I'm sorry at that time we had two units at Kane Island, and then we had the diesels and the one combined cycle there. Our total megawatts was just over 200-some megawatts. We have 48 employees today, counting me, and we have 710 megawatts of power we're putting out. So, you know, I guess that comes with, you know, some of the modern ways of doing things and bigger things in one spot. Of the 48 I have now, I'm here. I have an assistant down to plant, the assistant to also other clerical assistant, administrative assistant, rather, that works for Margie, my assistant, and also works for the plant folks at the dotted line to work for Jay down there. Then I have my front line is Margie downstairs, my executive assistant, or assistant to the VP. We our titles change a lot. Assistant to the VP, and then Jay Butters is the assistant VP. So that's my direct. And then you have maintenance and or operation and maintenance manager. You have the four shift supervisors, and we have for each crew they each have four people working for them. And we have Scott, and he has nine people. Two of them are welder. One's a senior. Tim has four people working for him, their instrument techs and electrical. They call them ICE. Don't banish ICE. It's instrument control and electric. They do the work down there. Then I have the grounds crew. Then there's I have the supervisor and the four grounds crew guys. And then I have our $40 million warehouse that we have our Susan's over. And then I have Richard Mead as my analyst, my financial analyst. Hope not leaving anybody out. Okay, good. Maintenance. I did my maintenance guys. I did the grounds crew. The operations. Jay Jason. Tom Schwartz here for GE. He works for us. He's under contract. I think I hit everybody.
So pretty broad.
Yeah, we covered a little bit of everything. Like I said, we have electrical and mechanical maintenance. We have the operational side of it. And again, right down to the building maintenance and mowing the grass. And also, those guys are so good that, and do such a great job and are so versatile. And I mean all the guys. They also are called to work at Treasure Coast during outages. Actually, we mow the grass here. Our crew goes down and takes care of the grass. We did a better job than what they're doing before. Almost every outage they have at Treasure Coast, which is a duplicate of our Unit 4, we go there and assist on them with our welders or with our mechanics and with our instrument techs. We have some of the best around. And during the hurricanes, we went down and assisted out the case.
Very good. I appreciate your petunias in the front of the house, at the front of the building, if that's what your crew did.
You mean down to this one? That should have been the crew here. That's not my crew.
That's been one of my biggest gripes is you can walk in there and if it's not taken care of and it looks scrubby, it really irritates me. So, Manny?
As general manager, what would your first 100 days look like? Or what would you do in the first 100 days as general manager?
Okay, the first 100 days, that'd be 3 months and 10 days. So that's not a long period of time. So I wouldn't be changing the world. What I would be doing is the very first, and you folks have touched on that, the very first thing I would do is call a staff meeting to my direct staff and calm them that, you know, the world isn't came to an end. It's not upside down. There's a different management style here, but it's not a negative style. It's something that we can work with, and I've worked with them all before. And we can go. And, you know, to be sure that we take the first step that, you know, nobody's afraid of anything. We're calm. This is a new change. And next, I would set up meetings to the rest of the cave, of all the cave, like we do each year around the holidays, where Mr. Washington's speech would organize those and tell the rest of the people, everybody relax. We're going to be fine. I've been here. I know how we do things. And we're going to do even better. And we're going to, you know, move ahead and do bigger and better things. So I would do that next. Then I would get with each of you and ask what your expectations are. From that point on, I go on the listening tour, find out what your expectations are, find from my VPs going to each department separately what their expectations are. I don't know that. I don't think I'd be able to do much in the public, but in the past we've had like the hurricane meetings. We also use opportunities to say what we do here and things. It might not even be bad to have at least a meeting in the public. But I would meet, then I would meet with our folks running from the city, from, you know, politicians from the city, the commission stuff. I know all of them. I've spoken with them before. And introduce myself and hear their expectations. Get all this feedback. And in the meanwhile, I'd be scheduling a strategic planning session for us. And it wouldn't be in that 100 days. It's too soon. But I'd have it a scheduled date so that we could all start getting our ideas of what to do with that. And set that out, and then that would be the final thing. Is after I pulled all this information together and got some sort of a plan, staff would come up with what information we've got from you, the public, however I get it, and from the rest of the employees, and what their ideas are. And once we get that together, we'd come up with a strategic plan recommendations. And there's something like I'm going to do tomorrow. I'm going over as a board member tomorrow and going to look at staff recommendations. So I steal some of these ideas, but they're good ideas. Jacob's a good leader. And then we'd have a day where you choose out of those and you would say, this is how we go forward. This is the plan we want out of this. Staff, go back and give me the way that we do it. So that would be the biggest thing first 100 days is communicate out and listen back. And the biggest thing would be listen back so I can set the plan going forward together.
Okay, who has Jose's number 5? His second. Somebody took it.
Number 5 is Ethel.
It's supposed to be an external only, but
Larry, what is the current satisfaction rating for your current employer, and how will you move to improve those ratings for KUA?
My current employer is KUA, and it's I think it's 87%, isn't it? Aren't we at 87?
Yeah. I've got a different list.
We've been up in high 80s, either 87 or 88, but it's in that range. One of the things is I mentioned, I think as a CEO, first of all, I continue the services we have. Services we have are the right services, but I examine those services. The biggest thing is service and keeping the lights on are two big things. You know, we have an issue of when we try to stay in the lower third of our competitors of where we are and what we charge for electricity. But sometimes that comes at a cost. We have storm hardening. Maybe some of those were lower enough. After a hurricane came through and hit the state with 100 mile per hour winds, we were back in 3 days. When Charlie hit us, the winds were between 80 and 90. And 90 burst, most of it was 85 mile per hour winds. We were down for 13 days. So that costs money. So I would do the things on us that they don't see. I would continue storm hardening so we're not off, so we can come back as quick as we did. Continue with the service them, and I'd be in the community. There would be, and not just me, the community meetings, we started up again. And we'd have a presence at the city, presence of the county. But, and continue with Chris, the hands-on thing Chris does are excellent. Continue with that. But we're doing a lot of good things to keep that going. We continue that. And right down to continue to give them the face-to-face service that we have downstairs. That's really big to a lot of people in this community. Even though the numbers are dwindling, as long as we have a customer that finds that important, I think we should provide that service.
Excuse me, Madam Chairman, just a question. What question was that? What number was that?
Five. On my sheet, Jose asked that.
So do we need to re-give question five?
Yeah, you want me to ask it?
I just asked
it. Can I do it as a follow-up?
What's your philosophy on energy conservation and efficiency?
No, that's not five either.
No. It says on here, what of your experience aligns with our power supply resource structure?
That's what I asked.
No, you asked.
No, or that's the one you asked. Somebody asked.
No, I asked him about FMPA.
I don't think.
Director.
So as a follow-up, Larry, what of your experience aligns with our power supply resource structure?
Correct.
Okay. Thought we had done that. Sorry.
I've been, for nearly 28 years, I've worked in the power supply department here at KUA, and I've worked in management probably right 26 years of that. I never was frontline management. I started the manager of the supervisors. Since then, I've watched the industry grow. I watch gas turbines become as a little side starter or for peak power to turn into the main primary movers. I've seen the technology come to what it is today, everything from the control systems to the metallurgy that we use now that we can do much higher temperatures on them. So my years of being in the power supply department has made me expert, and I've built three power units, one and two together, built three separately, and oversaw building building four with Jay. So I have plenty of experience in there, just by the nature of my job.
Thank you. Okay, Larry. Would you describe a specific difficult personnel issue you addressed, such as harassment, discrimination, or other improper activity? What did you do, what you did, the outcome, and what you learned from it?
I haven't had it in my department, but I've investigated two other departments over time. I had one where just recently there was one that has a statement was derogatory statement towards Hispanics was said in E&O, or was said to be, or now actually it was the other way around. It was a statement from a Caucasian employee said that the term he was being called was. So I did an investigation on that, just on that section of what was going on. So I have experience with that and gave the information, but that was turned over to Wilbur and them to finish in the department. So I've done that, and then also in another instance, one that was was the other way around, and I did that investigation. Turned in, but again, I didn't finish out what was going on. I'm trying to think that, I think the reason that we don't have that issue in Powers 5 and I didn't deal with it directly is a long time ago, we had somebody left the department and we was fired, and some of the other folks were saying, well, thought it was unfair. So they started saying, well, this and this is done down there. Well, we went through, things weren't done that way, but a lot of training was done. And so at that point, it got to where once I had one of our employees come in, and there was a counter up on the wall, and it was a General Electric counter, but it had different scenes from our place, and there was a man and a woman swimming in a bathing suit. And he said, that's offensive. Why can't I be in a bathing suit like that? I find that offensive. I took it down. I mean, that's the mindset we have. It's not like a work camp or things like that. But I'm glad I haven't been on the end of set of that. But we sort of have the culture that you don't do that in my department, so that's why I haven't dealt with it directly. I'm sorry.
Very good. Thank you.
Madam Chairman, yes. Just a clarification for you. With regards to the questions that the mayor had asked, he had previously asked question 4, question 15, and question 33. As a supplemental, the director, Urbina, had asked question 5, but it might be most appropriate to ask question 15, which was the question that the mayor had.
That was not on my page. Okay, that's just so.
So we need to back up, and Ethel needs to ask number 15.
Director Bannon would have been asking a follow-up question, and it was used in that capacity. So even at this point, you still need to ask the question 15 on behalf of the mayor.
To also clarify, because it looks like the numbers are not the same, is 15 the one that says about philosophy?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So should I ask now?
And you'll still have another. She'll still have another question, right?
Yes, ma'am. Her question, she can still.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay, so asking on behalf of Jose Alvarez, what is your philosophy on energy conservation and efficiency? Can you provide examples of programs implemented under your direction that demonstrates the application of your philosophy?
I guess there's a program under my direction in a sense. Yes, I'm for energy conservation, because yes, we need to sell our jobs to sell power, but the ratepayers come first. That's who owns it. So our job is to make it the best for them. So and that also keeps us from building another power plant. So it actually does save us money in the future where our power supply lasts longer. So yes, I'm good. I'm with energy efficiency. It brings lower prices. Energy efficiency in homes, that helps conserve and conservation. I help conservation. My plan, I'm not in our conservation programs out of customer service. And then Susan and her group handles that. So that's why I'm not directly, and she doesn't work for me today. So, but I do provide the money for that through FMPA. I'm on the Energy Conservation Committee there. And one of the things we worked on there was to bring solar. And that's when I've told you solar in the past. I believe in when we do those type of things, we do it when it's the most cost effective for our utility and for the ratepayer. Why solar didn't come a long time ago, it was too expensive. But it, when it wasn't, brought it. So out of that, what we did do for conservation to help out and to give all the different utilities some money to deal with, we take so much out of what our bill is, we tack an additional amount of money, it goes up to $800,000. And out of that, then it's divided by each of the utilities for either throughput. In our case, we're 30%. We use 30% of power with the biggest utility. So we get 30% of that, and then it goes, and on down, depending on what percentage is participating. Then you get that money annually. It comes to that, and Susan uses that to have the program. Well, the program is, that we have the free inspections. We have, now we're going to thermostats. We're going to go with the smart thermostats and give money towards that. We give money towards more efficient air conditioners, air conditioner inspections. We've done that in the past. But those are the different programs that we run. I do believe in them, and I believe in enhancing that. Our neighbors do it, and the IOUs do it. And so we need to be given the same service we need to get, we always need to give the same service or better than the IOUs, and certainly the same that our fellow municipals do.
Hey, Ethel, would you like to ask another question?
What is your vision of the future of the energy industry, and how do utilities companies such as KUA fit into your vision?
Okay, my vision of the utility of the future, as I told you earlier, I see that transmission is going to be a big deal. It'll even be a big deal with renewables. You know, we don't have many opportunities here for windmills, but solar's getting bigger and bigger. And one of the things you have to do is the solar is get it delivered. I mean, that's one of the biggest hurdles we had to when we're building this FP&L's building for us at NextEra in Holapa. Well, how do you get that to the different 13 cities in a reasonable price when you have transmission from OUC and across to us and the Duke and different places? So that's a challenge. That's going into the future. The batteries, as I mentioned before, whether or not they come in and mean anything, that has importance. I going into the long future, that's something to be addressed. The challenge on the industry itself is how we produce power. I'd say with going in the long future, we'll be doing it by natural gas for a long time. We do have big reserves of it, and the big utilities who are betting their next 20 years are building them. They're shutting down their coal plants. I gave the example of Duke. You know, shutting down a bunch of the coal plants and sending the folks down the train. They're doing it because they're all going to natural gas. NextEra, largest company in the country, they've just finished their complete fleet of gas and even brought a gas line down. So the future is going to be gas turbines, natural gas. We have a third gas pipeline here now. NextEra is actually going to build more. That was part of my vision of, well, do I take the opportunity to get a sales agreement with that inexpensive power where I don't have the risk. They have the risk, but I get inexpensive power for the future. And if they're going to run transmission lines from here to where they purchase Gulf Power, do I have an opportunity to get in on some of that and maybe tap off of myself so I don't have the cost of delivery for the transmission? So that's an opportunity. So the opportunities are the growth of taking advantage and leveraging the growth of the big utilities in our state. And the challenge is whether we can do that, whether the batteries hit us in and down on a lower level of challenges is, if there's a lot of electric being pulled to houses, load from electric cars and things, do I have a system here that can take care of it? The big picture is transmission and how we generate power going forward. And the small picture is efficiencies here. How do we keep the load, going forward on that, even if we do it with natural?
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, again, I apologize. I just want to point out something before you move on from Director Urbina. Mm-hmm. Director Urbina had asked previously questions from yesterday.
22 and 32.
22, 41, and 44. Today, the question follow-up was 32. So we still have question 44 as outstanding. So
I was going to ask.
But we haven't done our second round. No,
yeah, we're on the third round, correct?
You can. I'm just pointing that out. That
I explained it to me again, and how does it affect this?
Yesterday, Director Urbina asked question 22, 41. I'm sorry. Yes, 22, 41, and 44. Today, the third question from Director Urbina was 22, 32, 41. 32 is a new question. However, if you wish to ask that as a supplement, that's fine, as a follow-on question. But the questions asked yesterday would have been question 44. So you would still need to ask question 44 of applicants today.
Yeah.
So that's how we fix it. She just takes a turn and asks 44.
You need to still ask 44. Director Bina needs to still ask the question 44.
Okay.
Yeah, but that was my next question and the next round.
Okay.
Because 32, I ran out of time yesterday, but it's one of my four questions.
Do we have to cover it today, right now? Does she have to ask 44 now to make it?
No, you can have it asked at any point. I just wanted to clarify that we still require.
We don't have that much time left. She will not get another round.
I would suggest you add time because of this. You have a cushion between that.
Yes, we do. Okay, so we'll cover that.
Oh, we'll come back to you.
Okay, Ray, I think you're next.
Okay, Larry. How would you plan to ensure KUA sustainability through succession planning?
Same way that I do at K9 now. First of all, I think our next leaders may not even be the VPs over time. There's talent throughout this company. They may be the manager spots. They may not be in any of the spots yet. They may be outside. But within, in the succession planning, we have it. How we do it, and again, in my practical sense that we do it, we have 3-on-1s, which is me, my direct report, and his direct report of the operations and the maintenance side of things, of how we run for supervisors. We meet with one every week, and so as we rotate through the supervisors. So each time we're sit with the supervisor, we ask them, you know, first of all, we ask how they're doing, and we measure, are they ready for a next step? Are they ready for Jason's job or for a job someplace else? And we ask them about every one of their employees. And when it comes to operations, we have more than one crew, then we ask about the other crews, what they think about, where's the talent on the other crews? How they're coming, what do they need? You know, do we have folks that are on the cusp of making the next step, and is there something we need to provide to help them? So by doing that, we're in a constant succession planning because we're always measuring where everyone is and where the next step is. And a lot of this, we're really bright guys there, but also we're at a point that we have a lot of folks retiring. And so we have, because of that, we certainly, have, that's why we really put it into effect, to be sure we know where we're at all times for different levels of the jobs. As the way me sitting as a CEO, correct, and I certainly would be looking at them and seeing, be sure there's always someone ready. First of all, there'd always be somebody ready that could run the place for 2 weeks without missing a beat. A month, things would start getting a little thing, but then after that, you as a board have to decide whether you need leadership here or not on a basis. But I would always have someone ready that you wouldn't miss a beat, could run it for a month, and could keep the doors open without a catastrophe if something happened to me. That would always be part of the plan. But the initial staff, I'd be checking with them to see what they want to do. If you have folks that have no interest, then I would look down into their departments too to be sure that I'm touching all the talent that's close to the top that would have the opportunity to be.
Can I a quick follow-up? Yes or no, real quick. Do you feel comfortable with your second in command at the power plant that he could take your place tomorrow if he had to?
Yes. And my third.
If selected as general manager.
I'm going to tell you what number you're reading so we can.
54.
Okay. because I got kind of confused on what was going on, so.
If selected as general manager, what would KUA look like 10 years from now under your leadership?
10 years from now, I would see a workplace. I would see a company that's respected as it is now, and maybe even more so throughout the industry. We would be on leading but not cutting edge of what's new. We'd be doing things our way, not the industry's way. And what I mean by that is we would see the successes and failures of those around us, but we would still forge our own path learning from those successes around us. We would have, again, I continue with storm hardening. You are measured by your ratepayers and owners by how quick you come back, for how many outages you have, and how quick you come back from the storm. This would be a place that was open, transparent, We would have vision on the deals. I see us 10 years from now, I think we could do it in 10 years, that we would have a power supply that we could be sure of for the next 10, 15, or 20 years, that would be reliable and inexpensive. We'd be part of a transmission system that would help us get delivery reliable. But also the storm hardening, we would have on the other side, we'd have a rate structure that's conducive to bring in all the new technologies, whether it's electric cars or what it would be. We would have a rate structure because with the AMI, we would take AMI to the furthest point that we could to maximize its value, to offer many different rates, time of use rates, to encourage people to bring things in. I would keep us in, and I'd continue that we would be in the one-third when we could, and if we could not, then and be honest and open and say exactly how we're in the one-third. I'd want that to be set in such a way that it's actually achieving what we want, that we give people lower bills when they need to have lower bills, not necessarily in the shoulder months if they don't, if we don't have the money to do that. I see a company that we would be, I'm one for, I like Mark White, he stole half my thunder on what I would do with the thing, but I would not leverage us right away. I would stay with the commercial paper program, and maybe if it's still feasible even 10 years from now, I'd continue with that. It gives us flexibility, even if we had a line of credit somewhere. Should we be in debt? I don't believe in that. We're admired by all the other utilities at FMPA, that we're to the point of being debt-free, and I think that if we look at the way we keep in the bottom third and maybe adjust that, that we could start getting money so that we could do capital projects where that thing that comes up that the customer really wants, that like the AMI or any of the different projects or the opportunity to put in that substation. When we have cash is king. And as we do the cash flow, that is one way that we can control our rates. When we have a certain amount of rates, you know, we have to recover that, you know, through the demand portion of our bill. And that's about our biggest part of energy's love right now. So that would be another thing. I would have a setup like that in a situation that we're in good financial standing, ready for the future, and a conducive great place to work.
I have a follow-up on that. You is hardening your idea of the security, because we have the big threat that they will have some disaster with terrorists or whatever going into our system. Is that going to be a problem, do you think, in the future? Are we going to look at it?
Well, first of all, we have no choice. FERC pretty much gives those rules to us, and we do accordingly. I would obey the FERC rules and things that seem that would be possibly really a risk, then we may do even more. But the storm hardening, I'm hardening of a system I'm talking to, is that we keep replacing I mean, the difference between us and one hurricane and another is you go down Hoagland and you're down Clay Street, and it's all concrete poles, and we had wood before. They were all down after Charlie. We were back in a day or two with the other, that type of work. The underground, I know why we pull old underground out, because it's old, for one thing, because it could have been moved. Or so you take all those into consideration. But
yeah, my thing was the security of our system rather than from outside influences more than weather, but
Security will be done, and I'm for having the security of it, but we'll be mandated to do it also.
Okay, thank you. We have Manny.
Yep. Harry, how do you feel about the individual board members approaching directly your VPs or other employees for issues, or them approaching us directly? What would be your philosophy?
I would feel that serves you well, and that serves me well. I do that at FMPA all the time. Jacob's wide open. I could stop anybody other and ask him all the time. I like to, if I want information, I'll either ask Jacob or tell him. But not always, because once he's given me a certain topic, then I can pick up the phone and get information from him right away. How that's good for you is you have the opportunity to get information right away and talk to the experts rather than have to go through this whole big thing. What's good for me is if I have no fear of hearing, you know, Larry's doing everything wrong, or, you know, I don't know what's going on. But that is a good opportunity if they say, I don't know why we're doing this or this, that you could come back to me, and now I know. because they may not want me to know. Hopefully, people feel that they can tell it to me working for me. But if you're afraid to, with no repercussion on them, I need to know what mistake am I making. So I think it's great. I think I encourage it. That's part of my transparency. Transparency, especially, they're your employees, the same as they're mine, and they're the people at Kissimmee's employees. They all pay for them. You're trusting us to take care of over $1 billion worth of assets out there. So, no, they're wide open. I am all for that. I would encourage it.
Maddie, would you give me the number of that question, please?
It should be 36.
I don't have you down for 36, so I...
No.
He asked that every time yesterday, yeah. Though.
Yeah. So what I have here is not correct.
Correct. But it was just a question he asked yesterday.
It's 36.
Okay. My thing is I have a sheet here that says what your question is, and that wasn't on it. So there.
No, but it was asked to the other candidate.
Yeah, so you find the question.
Yeah, he's fine. Okay, you keep staying, stopping everything, so I want to make sure we're doing it right.
Well, during break, you can coordinate your list with this list.
I'm sorry. But every time I stop, they say, oh, you can't do that. So I want to make sure I can do this. Okay. We have Jose's question from, who was going to take that, Ray?
It was me, and it should be 33. Am
yes,
I correct?
It should be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Larry, please tell us about your experience working with a governing body such as our board of directors here.
I have a long experience working with a governing body like your board of directors here. and probably working directly with you. I've been a VP for 12 years, but Ben Sharma, to his credit, has been like Ms. Schwartz, giving me opportunities. So I've probably been speaking to the board for probably 20 years. And back when we were an on-the-all requirements project, we did purchasing down at Cane Island. And we set the purchasing was $50,000 level. We were here all the time, giving presentations. And so since it was coming out of plan, Ben would usually have me give those or assist him on it. So I've worked with the governing board, and of course, for the last 12 years with you folks and others who came before. it's a good experience. I've reported when Mr. Horde was here and Larry Walter I mentioned to Mr. Walsh, I said, because he would always ask when you're going to have something, and he'd take devil's advocate thing. And I said, well, you know, why are you taking this approach? He says, because if it doesn't get past me, it's not going to get past the board. So he said, you're right, if there's a question on it. And so I always got to the point where I'm not going to bring anything to you that I have to convince you of. I'm never going to bring anything to you that somehow I have to make it something that it's not. So having people like Mr. Horder, he's pretty rough and direct with you. He wasn't with me because I told him what we needed, what the cost was, why we needed it, and that's the way you approach every board member. I think that's the way to do it. So I have a lot of experience with that. I've experienced sitting in your seats. I'm the board over at the other utility over next door, and so I understand both sides of it. I understand this process. You're not done this process, and I understand this process. So I'm very comfortable with being on a board and presenting to a board.
Very good. We have 5 minutes left. I will take the next one. I think I'm right, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Your turn.
All right. Number 21, what examples can you offer as evidence of your successful leadership style and skills?
I think the one story I gave you about my big challenge was one example of leadership skills, because everything had to be done so indirect. I've been fortunate, or people have thought me of a leader. About most organizations I'm in, I'm chairman for a little while anyways, and I've never ran for the chair position or anything like that. So hopefully other people recognize that in me. Also, my skill, I brought a little thing here. I just got how fortuitous, it just came last month. But last month I was at the board meeting for FMPA, and we've had that 2 or 3 year long contentious thing with Vero Beach to get this settled. And one of the groups that were pushing to one side to get it settled sooner actually was Tim Zork from from Indian River County. He was county commissioner there, and he was very vocal. And he made his statements, and I'd give counter statements. And we got through the whole thing. Well, he came last month and gave certificates of appreciation to Jacob and to Jody for the hard work they did. And he gave a certificate to the to each of the board chair, the executive board, and the board board director's chairman. And I figured he's going to sit down. And he said, "I have one more. I have this for Larry Mattern." Now, you know, we went back and forth on different opinions on that. But he wrote this, "For your integrity, openness, innovation, and teamwork in assisting with the sale of Vero Beach Electric Utility to Florida Power and Light Company." And I was taken aback by that, but I think that reflects my management style of success is I'm not scorched earth. It goes back to the fairness. I think that we should be fair and honest in our negotiations, look for winners on both sides. And I've had a lot of success from that, even to the fact when we've been on both sides of an issue when it gets solved, that I'm surprised if someone would say something like that.
All right, to wrap it up, would you?
Okay, that's the board number 44.
Oh, the 44, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. We also have the outstanding question from Director Hemphill, which is question 62.
Mm-hmm. So they all have to be asked in one round, whether we ran out of time or not.
Yes, ma'am, it's best that we ask the question.
Okay, so, okay, after this, we'll go to Director Hemphill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good.
Larry, please tell us about one responsibility in your current job or a previous position that you really enjoy, and what responsibility did you enjoy the least?
I mean, in my previous job, I enjoy every single responsibility there is. My job I have now, my previous job, I was given opportunities to do this job and this job, and Schwartz gave me opportunities to do this job. I enjoy it all. I enjoy coming to work every day. I'm here very early because I enjoy where I go. There's one thing I don't enjoy. There is one thing, and that is termination of an employee. That is one part of the job I do not like. And Mr. Walsh is the very last say, but I'm the recommendation out of my department when we fire somebody. And that is the worst. That is the part of my job I do not enjoy. Every single other part of my job, even if I have a troubled employee that we turn around and ends up becoming a good employee, I enjoy that. Especially enjoy that, but I don't like part of it. But I do it better.
Thank you. Next would be, I see that, Ray, I have two questions here, 57 and 62, that are not marked off. Did she not ask one of them yesterday?
Yes, ma'am, she did. But question 62 was asked.
Okay, so 57 was not asked.
57 was not asked. 58 was in its place. And that started with the first interview yesterday.
Okay, do 62, please.
62. Larry, what are your career objectives? And how does becoming our president and general manager fulfill those objectives?
Well, right now my career objective is to become the CEO, president, general manager, CEO of Kissimmee Utility Authority. And there was times that I thought either this or FMPA. But when the opportunity came from FMPA, first of all, they ended up with a very good CEO. When the opportunity came up and actually was asked by Mr. Walsh, was I going to put in, thought about it, thought, no, I can do better for KUA there as a board member than I can as a CEO. This is my company. We have the thing at KUA. You cut us, and we bleed KUA blue. So this is the place that's given me the most opportunity of any place I've worked. I came in and said, "Boy, so nice working for your uncle," and I'm family here. So that's why I wanted to be I want to stay here, and to be the CEO. I've also had the opportunity to watch this company grow, and I see the direction that it's came from and what we're capable of doing. I see and I see the talent around me today, how much more we can do. I see the opportunities with our joint action agencies that we work with. We have such good people there and such thing that we with them, we can go so far. So I just want to be able to keep this company you know, I've said, I gave this analogy. You know, KUA is a beautiful schooner. We're known throughout the country, around throughout the world because of power gen. But we're like this beautiful schooner, and we're still in the water, we're still moving, and the sails have air in them. But I want to be the captain there and just get those sails corrected just enough to get the rest of that wind in there and get us right up to full speed again. And I think we could do that. We have.
Nice analogy. Okay, are there any other questions that are outstanding that we need to ask?
No, ma'am.
Thank you. Larry, would you like to wind up with a statement?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you all for giving me the opportunity to for the job. I hope through this time and through my lengthy presentation that I was able to let you know that I have the skills and experience to do this job. I think I've had the opportunities that I've taken advantage of through my years to learn everything I need to, and taking opportunities through the community and through our elected officials and working with them, that I think that we, and also our joint action agencies. So I think I've done everything necessary to do a very good job for you in the future, and I think you consider giving me.
Thank you. And we will be doing that decision tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. I'll be in the.
Thank you for coming in.
I'll be in FMPA doing this. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I really do need to say with all sincerity.
Thank you,
sir. I've shaken your hands in the past.
So you can get with Wilbur.
Are we temporarily adjourned?
No.
We are adjourned.
Oh,
I still need your...